Welcome to Polycast, an official podcast of a Poulton Civilization site. Daniel Quick.
Makalua.
Imran Siddiqui.
Cardamandua.
With guest co-host
Raf High.
The keyboard of death has returned.
This is like a scary movie.
Don't open the door!
Welcome to Polycast, the first episode for 2009, with guest co-host Tim Pratt, Raf High, that's me, and Dan Quick.
Beeping what?
And laughing.
Wow. Sorry about that, Tim. Mackie decided to interrupt your introduction. I don't know what's going on.
Oh, my heart.
That was, like, superb.
Mackie's back in 2009 with a new attitude.
Yeah.
Hello, and welcome to 2009.
Makalua?
Still caffeinated.
Katamandua?
Happy New Year.
And bringing up the last of the list, Imran.
This year is already better than the last.
The last of the least.
The last of the list.
Civ 4 Call gameplay variations.
It was an archived segment, and it came out in episode 58. It was episode 58, but it was recorded in September, right when the game was coming out, and it was a comment that there really was a lot of variation in gameplay for Civilization IV Colonization. Dale was pointing out that there have been lots of mods since then that have changed that, have opened up the gameplay, and so, yes, we would like to acknowledge that, for instance, is Age of Discovery, which was released by the time we talked about it, but there really wasn't very much else.
In the Senate, we drug up an old topic about our favorite civic combinations and how they may have changed as we first talked about it way, 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 way back in episode 14.
In forum talk, all on succession games on CFC, where Tim monologued and monologued and monologued.
That's what she said.
I feel so much better now.
Then two interrelated topics. Are war elephants too powerful? Threat here in a Poulton, and then over at CFC, war elephants versus Pikemen. Only on pay-per-view. And finally, you've grown too powerful for us.
That's what she said.
It's one of those phrases. It never gets old.
No, it doesn't.
Annalie?
I'm sorry, what are we talking about?
That's Imran's line. Hey, hey, hey.
Welcome to the Senate, where we discuss game strategy.
So yes, this is, of course, the third season of Polycast, something I never thought I'd be saying in all seriousness, but it's true. And way back in episode 14 in our first season, back in April of 2007, wow, we looked at our favorite civics combinations. But there have been some changes in Civ 4 since then. We've seen Beyond the Sword released, we've seen a number of patches come out, and, of course, our co-hosts here, or at least I'll speak for myself, my gameplay has changed a bit since then. So, for the better.
Mine has stayed the same.
Because you never play.
Favorite civics combinations. I'll let someone else handle this.
He's like, what's a civic?
What's a combination?
I went back and looked at my show notes from episode 14 to see what I had actually picked. And looking at them, I've pretty well changed almost everything. Back in episode 14, I broke the comparison down between war and peace, whereas now I don't view it quite the same way. Not quite so black and white lines. Let's start with government civics. Despotism, hereditary rule, representation, police state, and universal suffrage, where, of course, despotism is your default, which has no effects, although really the unwritten effect is get another government civic, because this one stinks.
I like it.
I guess at some point it's a neutral rather than a negative, but despotism, if that's your favorite government civic, then don't talk to me.
So which government civic do you like?
Hereditary rule to start with, and then representation, once representation becomes available. The reason I like hereditary rule is, of course, for its benefit of plus one happy per military unit stationed in the city. By the time representation comes around, unless I decide to go for the pyramids and get the pyramids so I can get to representation early, by the time representation otherwise comes around, I have combinations of coliseums and temples and whatnot to help as far as the happiness goes, so it's not as critical to have that happiness based on military units stationed in the city. But I prefer representation ultimately for the science benefit, which I guess I might as well spell out here. Plus three science per specialist and plus three happy in the 4 to 6 largest cities depending upon map size.
Apart from your comment about building coliseums, I pretty much agree with that. I don't think I've ever built a coliseum.
Really?
Nope.
It helps if they come around and you haven't had any religion spread to your city yet.
Yeah. I've had that a couple of times.
Or not founded any.
I'm like, please, religion, come on.
That's what the whip is for.
But at some point you'd like to keep your, you know, research up and the whipping is kind of counterproductive.
Yeah.
That's an oxymoron.
No, it's not.
Tim, are you hereditary rule too then?
In most of my games, I tend to build the pyramid, so I jump straight past all of that to representation. I mean, I don't land it every time, but hereditary rule is useful. As long as you can have a city somewhere that can build cheap warriors that is disconnected from your metals, then that's very useful. I've done that a few times. Just pump out warriors and send them to all your big cities to keep happy.
Since they're not going to be useful for much or anything else anyway.
No.
Yeah, I generally go for the hereditary rule. I don't really know why. It just happens to be a favorite. I like some of the bonuses, and I don't rush the pyramids all the time.
If I have stone, I'm definitely going for the pyramids, because this is double production. Unless, of course, there's some concerns about the war, and the city that would be really good to build the pyramids in needs to be building some units so I don't die. But yeah, I mean, hereditary rule being the first government civic you can get off of despotism.
Mm-hmm.
But even that's a long way away. I mean, monarchy is, it takes a while to get there.
That's true.
Yeah, I usually end up using hereditary rule too. I usually switch into it early on, and then I just totally forget about switching it out later. And I look back when it gets around.
Like, oops.
Yeah, I get to modern era, and I go, oh, I should change that. Yeah,
that's pretty much like me too.
Still in hereditary rule.
This is better than despotism. It works for most of the game.
Dan, I'm more like you, as I'm more of a builder type, so therefore I don't necessarily like hereditary rule as much. And prefer the ones, you know, representation or universal suffers that allow me to have more money or more science-y stuff. So
yes, that's what happens to me. About the time that I notice that I'm still in hereditary rule, about the time I notice that, where's all my money?
Oh, I still have hereditary rule.
Oh, well, that explains it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I like the cash that you overflow with and can, you know, buy units in the later games. So that's always nice.
Universal suffrage. Yeah, I can spend gold to finish production. I really don't have that much gold later on in the game to benefit enough from universal suffrage, from that ability. And you also get plus one hammer from town, and it's true that I definitely have more cottages now. You really need that on the higher difficulty levels than I was playing when we were recording episode 14. But by the time that I can get democracy, most of my cities have sufficient production capability that being able to use gold to finish production really isn't going to gain me that much, and then I lose what representation gives me. But I could certainly see uses for universal suffrage, but for police state, I know it gives you minus 50% war, but that's why I've got jails everywhere. I realize it's not minus 50%, it's only minus 25. But and then plus 25% military unit production. Just get yourself some forges and earlier on, and then factories and power plants. And
yeah, I think police state really only comes into use if you get into a really, really, really long war. And you need that extra, and your war awareness is so high that you need the extra discount on it, as it were. More units to kill this war.
Yes. So then I guess that takes us into legal civics, barbarism, vassalage, bureaucracy, nationhood, and free speech. I'm going to eat a little bit of words what I said. I still remember making fun of Paler WRG for mentioning bureaucracy, where I was like, bureaucracy, boo! I never chose it, but now if I have a smaller empire, I will go for bureaucracy.
Uh-huh.
For the plus 50% hammers and plus 50% commerce in your capital.
Do we get to say I told you so now?
Ha-ha-ha! And bureaucracy was great for the slingshot at the time. When we did that episode.
I sit in bureaucracy most of the game and only swap out to free speech in the last third.
If I have a larger empire, there's a 50-50 chance I will actually go to vassalage for the experience points for the units. Not so much for the more free units, especially if I also have some military concerns with vassalage for the plus two experience unit points. Now, it's true that I am a very much a mounted units person, so that really doesn't help if you've got yourself your barracks and your stable. But for my city defenders, I like having that. But again, it's 50-50 because the upkeep cost is high, and then bureaucracy is also tempting to make your capital that much shinier.
Shiny!
I also, too, go towards free speech almost always, particularly if I have no war concerns. If I do have some war concerns or there seems to be a lot of espionage damage against me, like the AIs and they're freaking taking out improvements and sabotaging production, then there could be a period for nationhood, plus 25% espionage points in all cities. Plus, it also gives you a bit of return if you've got barracks in terms of the happiness, plus two happiness from barracks. Kind of a bit of a partial throwback to hereditary rule. And it can also be helpful if you find yourself in a war situation where you can draft 1 to 5 units per turn, depending upon the map size. But yeah, kind of a vassalage bureaucracy split, and then free speech ultimate.
Yeah, my split is more bureaucracy and free speech. Because once I get bureaucracy, having that plus 50 hammers and plus 50 commerce in the capital, especially early in the game, is huge. Because you can start a tech lead and everything else rolling from that. And then when you finally get to free speech, then that's probably when you have more cities, so the extra gold kind of is almost as good as when you had the plus 50% commerce, and then you have 100% culture, because at that point you want to push borders out and you get off my lawn.
I like it.
Oh, yes, the plus 2 gold from town. I never even hardly ever take that into consideration. It's always plus 100% culture. Oh, a whole bunch of nations nearby. They're doing much better with culture. Yeah, because they got those wonders early on. I need something to counter that. Am I going to increase the culture slider? Almost.
No.
So what else am I going to do? Oh, free speech, yay.
And if you've been building your cottages early like you should have, you will have a lot of towns to get plus 2 gold from.
What I hate is trying to find the sweet spot where you want to swap from bureaucracy to free speech. Like, is the commerce that I lose in my capital going to be more than offset from the plus 2 gold in the towns? And you swap and you find it's not. And then you go, do I swap back? Or do I reload?
And also, you're looking at the 50% hammers and going, you know, I could crank out a lot of wonders with that 50% hammers.
Taj Mahal's coming up. I need the hammers for that. Yeah.
Yeah. You keep thinking of reasons to delay from switching.
Just a few more turns. Yeah.
I do like free speech, but I think that's because I'm an idealist, and so I prefer things to be happy and good, and in my little head, I think I'm making my people happy. Thinking, oh, they'll be so happy when they see I've given them free speech and representation. But I place it weirdly, I think. It's more of a make-believe world than a game. I don't know. Does that make sense?
Yeah. So is there anything in between barbarism and free speech, with barbarism being the default?
I think I try to move through them quickly, and I just move up the totem pole whenever I get the research to do this, because each one's a little bit better.
Oh, okay.
That's generally how I feel.
I usually don't hit nationhood. I don't usually fight many wars.
No, I think that's probably true. I don't do that one either.
Nationhood is usually, oh my gosh, I'm in trouble. I need units. Quick, switch so I can draft.
Yeah. Basically. Oh, crap.
labor civics, tribalism, slavery, serfdom, caste system, and emancipation. This is where my biggest change is. I had said back in episode 14, emancipation all of the way. Somewhere between episode 14 and before now, there was also serfdom in there. I avoided slavery. Not that I was morally against it in the game, as some people have said, but I was just like, oh, sacrificing population, people are going to be upset. How do I know if I'm doing it too much? I'll just avoid it entirely. Now, one of the first techs I almost always go for is if I don't have mining, I go for mining, and then I go for bronze working for a combination of do I have copper for axemen at the very least, and so I can switch over to slavery. It is absolutely critical, certainly in the higher difficulty levels that I haven't even touched, just trying to stay freaking alive, but
yeah.
Even on Noble, to have any kind of decent empire in the later game from which to launch attacks, or at least try to have it so people go like, oh, you're a sufficient size, I'm not going to attack you. You need that ability. Even if you could have universal suffrage right from the beginning of the game, let's say if by some stroke of magic you could, but you need gold, and yeah, you're not going to have that. So... I definitely have slavery until typically emancipation. And when do I switch to emancipation? Well, definitely if another civ already has it and it's starting to have a negative impact to the point where I have workers who are no longer working. I mean, if it's just they're unhappy, but it actually hasn't kind of tipped the scales that they're not actually going towards it yet. I may not go to emancipation if I still, say, have some newer cities, whether it's newer cities I've settled or usually newer to me, and it didn't have any improvements to begin with, or I lost a number of improvements, and I want to be able to whip those out. But other than that, slavery, and then to emancipation, and sometimes serfdom. If there's no more expansion going on, and slavery becomes kind of one step forward, two steps back, then I will go to serfdom in between.
I do like emancipation just because of all the fun cottage, hamlet, village stuff. And also because, you know, people get mad if other people have it and you don't.
Oh, yes, the penalty.
Yeah.
That's actually most of my reason for switching. Growth is nice, yes. But also the to the other civs is great.
And of course, yeah, one of the things I do like is if I'm the first one to switch over to make all the other civs get people pissed. Exactly. I'm like, yeah.
Yes, I've researched emancipation. Time to screw the AI over.
So, I mean, yeah, I mean, I try to keep slavery a little bit, but, you know, I usually switch to emancipation fairly quick.
I'll actually switch to serfdom if in a peaceful game when I'm getting kind of big, I've gotten like up to 10 cities or so and I really need to work the improvements, or if I've been warring and I need to rework the lands I've taken over. Because that extra 50%, you have some workers, but you never have enough. So the extra 50% gets it all built faster, and then I can go either back to slavery or forward to emancipation.
What's that? You don't like what the AI does with their tile improvements either? Gee.
Why did you build a farm there?
It is nice to have the workers build things so fast with serfdom.
I sit in slavery quite a lot. If I'm spiritual and I can freely swap, or in a golden age and I can freely swap, I would probably oscillate between slavery and caste system. Dropping into serfdom, for instance, when I can railroad, if I've got a huge amount of worker work that I need to do, I'd drop into serfdom at that stage. And for emancipation, I typically let the game force me in there. You know, growing unhappiness, losing production, and then I take the last step of going into emancipation. Typically, my cottages are already towns at that stage because I start early.
Tim, what is it about caste system that attracts you to the caste system? Is it the plus one hammer from workshops, or is it unlimited artists, scientists, and merchants?
Oh, definitely. It's the plus one hammer from workshops. Not. No, the unlimited artists, unlimited scientists, unlimited merchants. What I like to do, if you're in caste system and you capture a large city, you run... Like, obviously, it's in revolt for like 5, 6, 7, 8 turns. You dial out all the artists, and then the turn it comes out of revolt, you lose one population,
boom.
You get a huge injection of culture, and your city jumps out to either 2 or 3 tiles. And so you take that land back in the first go. You're going to lose that turn of population anyway, but then you need to remember to go back to that city and get rid of all the artists, or your city just goes down and down and down and down because you're not working any of the tiles.
That's like a mini culture bomb.
Yeah.
Now see, this is something I actually am going to make a note about to try. That's a great idea.
Sometimes I do sit in caste system and run a lot of scientists, especially if you're in representation and in pacifism. Those three are a real sweet spot. So are we bored of civics yet? I am.
No, we're not bored of civics.
Two more categories and then we can shut up about civics.
For another 2 years.
Yeah. Then we can shut up until Civ 5.
The economy category really confuses me because nothing comes in for ages because banking's halfway through the game.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Mercantilism is pointless because I typically go banking economics.
Yeah, and then you're like, free market?
Yeah.
Mercantilism, free.
Yeah, hello.
I'll just jump straight into free market. State property and environmentalism, I hardly ever touch. I might go state property if I have a stupidly huge...
Empire?
Yeah.
Thank you, empire. What's the word I'm looking for?
Yeah, if you're trying to do a conquest win, state property can really help.
Mm. You always know those commies wanted to take over the world. Environmentalism almost seems useless.
I suppose late in the game, if you had a lot of corporations and you were having bad health problems and things, maybe you'd switch into it, but I don't know. Free market's just that good. This is the one civics category was kind of imbalanced because free market's just so universally useful.
Environmentalism works when you're playing for a time victory, and that's it.
Well, and also for the reasons that Mackie stated, I would go to that too. If I'm going to be in a position where I can get myself, Civilized Jewelers or Sid Sushi, because I actually don't find myself often sitting in free market. I actually go to state property, and I sit there. Usually, I'm in free market, and I don't necessarily switch to state property right away.
Okay, I seriously want to play you in multiplayer in that case.
I think he's saying that he doesn't like your choices.
I'm saying I slightly disagree with your state property stance.
And I slightly disagree with your free market stance. You know, if mercantilism was available earlier in the game, It depends. If you were by yourself, if you were in isolation, I guess that's where mercantilism can be helpful, actually.
Yeah, but there's so much benefit from having the foreign trade routes, usually. And I'm always really confused when I see the AI go to it. I'm like, why are you doing that? If you're already down, you're just killing yourself worse.
No, I think they do it to limit you. Because you're getting a lot of commerce from the AI, and they lock you out, trying to hold you back. Especially if you're on free markets.
We'll see. Mercantilism versus free market. Who's going to win here? Oh, let me think.
Yeah, it's like cutting off your nose to spite your face. Yeah.
That's where I'm trying to go.
The fifth and final one. Paganism, organized religion, theocracy, pacifism, and free religion.
If I have a religion, I would sit and organize religion for quite a while. I love the +25 hammers.
Absolutely.
I love the ability to spread religion around without the monastery. But the thing is, you need to build a monastery because when scientific method comes around and kills all your monasteries, if you haven't built monasteries, then you have to go back to organized religion just to spread religions around, which is a pain.
Right.
Theocracy, I hardly use. If I'm gearing up for a particular war, I'd use it.
Yeah, the experience points are nice. I mean, I like the research boost in free religion. I think that's a very good benefit.
Yeah, and if you're trying to do cultural, since you're going to already try and put multiple religions in a city, the extra happiness per religion per city is nice, too.
And once you've generated the 10 or 15 GPs that you need, it takes ages to generate another one, so you may as well sit in free religion. Pacifism doesn't give you much benefit after 15, 20 GPs.
And the +1 cost for a military unit is kind of...
Yeah.
That kills too.
Sucky.
Yeah, I've heard of all the same. Setting an organized religion, if I have one. And then free religion later on in the game. Most of my cities are really not either building that many buildings or my production is sufficient now that +25%. Whereas, yeah, it'd be nice to have +10% research in all my cities, and now you've got sufficient science that +10% can be significant. I mean, you also get that from monasteries, but that's not the real reason I build it, because, you know, +10% when your city is producing 2 or 3 or 4 science. Woo, scary, awesome. Not.
And having no state religion with free religion helps a lot if you're trying to play a peaceful game and you have AI all around you. But also, it smooths out your relations with all the AIs. Don't have the big bonus from sharing the same religion, but then the people who had a different religion from the one you had aren't so all, you heathens.
Especially when their religion is the dominant one and it hasn't spread to you.
Yeah.
Uh-oh.
Oh, and I forgot to point it out earlier, but the AI switching to vassalage is usually a sign they're about to attack somebody.
Oh, yeah.
Usually you.
Yes.
Your next-door neighbor has suddenly switched to vassalage and serfed him. Uh-oh.
Crap.
So-and-so has switched to police state. Oh, fuck.
Yes. Yeah, that combo. I've seen that so many times and I go, oh, crap.
Police state, vassalage, bureaucracy.
This is Forum Talk, where we investigate hot civ issues in the forums.
You guys have never talked about succession games, which I thought was a funny thing to leave out.
While we were waiting for someone knowledgeable to come on the show and talk about it, seeing there's so many things we talk about the show for which we're not knowledgeable, we'll try something new.
It's true.
Well, I have actually played in a couple on Poly, but it's been quite a while.
How come you guys don't play succession games? They're tremendous.
Time.
Do you know what a succession game is?
I do. I don't know if they do.
My smart-ass answer, it's games that are successive.
Is it where someone takes over from someone else and continues on the game?
Effectively, you put together a team of 5-6 people, and you play through the one game. One person plays 10, 20, 30 turns, hands it over to the second person who plays 20 or 10 turns. As the game progresses, the turn set becomes shorter. Like you might play a set of 10 turns. The object of the game is to play the game that you dealt and report back to your teammates and all the other lurkers that read your reports on what's happening in the game, the AIs you're interacting with, what techs you're looking at researching. There are also competitive succession games where they just go real anal and analyze everything to death. Like, do I build a warrior or do I build a barracks? And, you know, 50 pages later, they decide to build a worker.
Sounds like a democracy game.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a little too much effort for me.
You can adopt certain restrictions in succession games, like I'm only going to build siege weapons, or I'm only going to build units that don't have humans in them. So tanks are okay, you know, siege weapons are okay, but warriors and soldiers are out. I'm going to build a game where I don't have any cottages or wild things like that and see whether you can win. There's also lots of storytelling things that you can do with games. Played a succession game called Chaos Game, where every person in the set had to have a different characteristic. So one was a warmonger and basically had to declare war on everybody. One was a repairer and had to put your economy back in a good shape and stuff like that.
This thread that you referred us to,
there's an etiquette guide that a couple of people put together, people over at Deviant Minds, about how they like to play succession games.
Oh, yeah, I saw those on there, like some relate to the punctuality of reports, Charlie not belittling one another, Echo, and keeping signage current and meaningful, India. So what are the consequences for people who participate in a succession game that have this guide in place, but they don't follow it?
You don't get invited back.
Ah.
And some people don't play these, but a lot of people jump into the game, de-lurk, give the game some suggestions like, you might want to look at this or you might want to look at that. And if somebody gets a little bit rowdy, then a lot of the lurkers jump in and berate him silly.
That's fun.
Peer pressure.
So I take it you got into succession games because...
They certainly added a lot of spice. And you get to pick up other people's play approach.
Take it then that anyone can start a succession game?
Yeah, anyone. It helps to have a good idea, and it helps to have been involved in other games. If people like your style, then if you start a new game and people like your style in old games, they'll log on and have a look and maybe play with you. I've just started a game playing as Napoleon, and we've decided to play as the AI plays, but also play as Napoleon would play. And so we're keeping track of our attitudes to all the other civs. Yeah, minus one, he thinks I'm short. Yeah, minus one, he's not French. Yeah. Plus one, I'm taller than he is. Those sort of things.
Plus two, he likes our wine.
Hey, that's a good one. We haven't got wine yet, but I'll remember that.
So are most of these succession games based in Beyond the Sword, or if those people just have Vanilla or Warlords, are there still some of those kicking around? Or
You'd have to start your own for the Vanilla and Warlord ones. The older games started in Vanilla, but they pretty much stay up to date.
All right, is there anything else you wanted to add or bring up about Succession games there, Tim? Or do you think we've covered it well now? Well, you have covered it well.
Okay, we got to cut this whole segment out of the whole podcast.
Okay.
The one excellent.
Hey. If you want, all right, whatever.
I'll just chat away to myself, knowing it's going to end up on the floor. Not a problem. No, that's it.
Okay. In this thread on Polton, are War Elephants too powerful? Started by Ming, who has guested on Polycasts in the past and is apparently an administrator on a Polton. Ooh, I'll have to check that.
Is this Ming guy?
He says, I've noticed that in many games that if I don't have elephants nearby, I feel like starting a new game. And in multiplayer games, if I see my neighbors have them and I don't, I know it's going to be a short game for me. If you have stables and give them shock, the shock promotion, which is plus 25% versus melee units, following combat 1, which itself is plus 10% strength, they can take out spearmen. It really takes pikemen to do the job properly on elephants. And they pretty slaughter other mounted units all the way up to cavalry, and even then, they at least stand a chance. Yeah, there are a ton of better units out there, but you can get elephants really early in the game, and they have a long shelf life.
Hmm.
I love elephants. They're an Urba unit. I was playing through the CFC's Hall of Fame, and you have to do like 33 civilizations. You have to play as each civilization. And at the end, I was just churning them out, playing small maps, elephants, marathon, and just rolling over the AIs with elephants and cats.
I love elephants, but we already knew that.
I don't know if I'd restart my game over not having ivory, but they are very nice when you do have ivory. I don't know about too powerful, though, because it's also dependent on you having ivory, and as he said, a lot of times he doesn't have ivory when he starts, so that's the balance. You don't always have ivory. It's not guaranteed.
And as Ra points out later in the thread, although it is rare, it seems that if you do have elephants, you usually have more than one tile with them on it. It seems to be, hey, there's like no elephants on west side of the continent or in the central continent, but on the east side, they've got cities that got like two, three, four of them in a single city's fat cross. What's going on?
Elephants like to hang together.
They are herd animals.
The other thing I like about elephants is they're a sweet whipping spot. In marathon, it takes 100 hammers. A whip generates 90. So you put like 5 hammers into an elephant, you whip for 2 people, and you've got 2 elephants next turn.
And of course, in addition, this is the luxury resource that gives you a pretty powerful unit. And so as Blowpanzer notes, the AI will go after it as soon as they see it, because it is a luxury resource. And he says, other than workers and infantry in the last half of the game, no unit is as useful for so long. To the point that Krill suggests that in addition to horseback riding and construction, they ought to require metal casting, at the very least. I don't know about that, but perhaps, as someone points out, you know, you can see ivory on the map right away if you have it. You don't have to get to a certain technology to be able to see it. Perhaps maybe you cannot see elephants until you get construction.
Hmm.
Oh, that'd be nasty.
What? Wait. Oh, those big gray colors. They look like animals. Thank God we researched construction to find out.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's...
Instead of something more sensible like, oh, animal husbandry.
Oh, how did I miss those giant things?
I wondered why all the workers were getting squashed over there.
To tell the Hun actually towards that and trying to balance the gameplay and the realism says, perhaps before you research fire tech, you just see a big animal in the square, a nondescript graphic. You really don't know what it is, and then, of course, once you've researched the required tech, then all of a sudden it's, oh, and you can actually make use of it.
That's not a bad idea.
When people complained when they took away horses, you know, when they initially Civ 4 was released and you could see horses, and the first patch came out and you couldn't see it until animal husbandry, and someone said, oh, you always saw this big animal rushing around, but you could never knew what to do with it.
You could even do something like that with the different types of metal and gem bonuses and mining. You just see something that looks like you could put a mine there that's shiny rocks, but you don't know what kind of shiny rocks.
Until you discover mining?
Yeah.
Okay, so patch what? 3.47?
I think the quote of this thread, though, is actually only tangentially related, which is, every good stack of death needs a healthy mix of units. And then 2 minutes later, that could be the winner for the No Shit Captain Obvious Award of the Year. In my defense, I've had a few drinks. That was from Theban. But yeah, certainly, if you're going to be sending your war elephants out, seeing how they don't receive defensive bonuses, and after someone points out, after they attack, they're probably going to be weakened a little bit. So if you'd like the chance for the elephant to heal, you might want to bring a unit along that has a defensive capability.
Yeah, toss a couple spearmen or swords in there, yeah.
Or some more elephants.
No.
And a unit with the medic promotion would also be nice.
What's that No Shit Captain Award?
With his trusty sidekick, Commander Duh.
Commander Duh.
So I guess that then leads into the War Elephants versus Pikemen discussion. Now, War Elephants, unpromoted, of course, are 8 strength and 1 movement and cost 60 hammers. Also costing 60 hammers are Pikemen, and they also have 1 movement and have a base strength of 6. And they are plus 100% versus mounted units, whereas War Elephants are plus 50. And person who started this thread...
Sim1.
He says, I was wondering, when given the choice to build both either War Elephants and Pikemen, assuming you have all the necessary resources and technologies, what would be your choice of units to counter enemy mounted units? My initial thoughts on this question so far is that War Elephants appear to be a luxury unit if you can build it. You should have some, but only in moderation. Well, it depends, as we were saying before, if you actually have ivory. So that may moderate how much you're going to be able to build, if you're going to be able to build them at all. But I think, as a lot of people pointed out in this question, based on the question, which is to counter enemy units, which one would you rather have, pikemen or elephants? I would say pikemen.
Did you read the thread?
Yeah, I read the thread.
I thought the conclusion was elephants.
He disagrees with the conclusion.
Well, now with elephants, if you're talking about being on the attack, if you're going to be defending, but you're actually, you know, units coming to your cities, and then you are going to then use the elephants to attack the units that are thinking of attacking you. But for defensive purposes, by the time pikemen become available, I would be going for pikemen. I'd still have elephants. They're certainly a much more all-purpose unit, and earlier on in the game, before pikemen come around, absolutely.
Yeah, I'm just looking at, there's a couple of posts in there with the strengths after modified, and it's got pikemen and war elephants. Pikemen, I think, have a slight edge in the mathematics component. More versatile. It's not often you want to attack a fortified longbow with a pikeman.
But elephants are cuter.
Yeah, and the question is about being countering enemy units. Well, pikemen are plus 100% and war elephants are plus 50. And then in terms of the promotions that you can give, well, you can give pikemen combat 1, for instance. And then pretty soon, once they just have a couple of battles or two, then you could get into combat too. I mean, that seems to be a primary purpose for pikemen,
mm-hmm.
when you're talking about defending against mounted units.
Aren't the promotions pretty similar? Like combat 1, 2, and then formation for both of them, if you want to counter mounted units?
Yeah, I'd rather be using my elephants to go after melee units.
Yeah.
Because after you get combat 1, then you can go to shock.
Good point.
And because of that, and of course you can do that, and you can get those promotions right away as long as you have both the barracks and the stable in the city. That's the key. Don't forget to have the barracks and the stables in your cities. If you're going to be going for war elephants, it's nothing like, oh, I forgot.
Why doesn't this freshly minted elephant have no XP? Oh, no barracks. Oh, no stables.
Dope.
If you forget one, that's like, aw. But if you forget both of them,
if you're building units in a city and you've forgotten barracks, there's something wrong.
Yeah, you're playing settler.
No, pre-settler.
Civ, you're playing it wrong.
A post from Tefros. That's a good observation, which is the fact that we're comparing units from different eras is a testament to how damned good war elephants are. The main team says, well, elephants are very, very good. The extra very is from AI stupidity. Otherwise, they're just very good. You've grown too powerful for us. I'll let someone else introduce that because I don't really feel like butchering that username.
Okay.
Huh? Gwinja? I like Gwinja because it sounds like ninja.
Go for it.
Yes, it wasn't just me thinking that.
I'm like, ooh, I like that. I don't know if that's how it's really supposed to be, but I thought it was cool.
In my current game, I've gotten a huge lead, and rather than take forever to win via space, I've sent my stack of death to conquer the other continent and leave my current continent in peace. The other continent has Charlemagne and Darius on it. Charlemagne is Darius' master, but after the war starts for a bit, Darius renounces. Charlemagne capitulates to me. I ask Darius to be my vassal, and he says, "You've grown too powerful for us. What a lame reason," quote unquote. So he's trying to figure out what is going on. And I think the best response comes from Diamond Eye, which is, "The reasoning behind that excuse is that a civilization as powerful as yours is likely to go to war with someone the civ does not want to wage war against. Thus, they don't want to be your vassal to avoid being drawn into that."
And there's also this thing called game balance. They don't want you to just be able to just go to every small civ and go, "You will join us or die."
Okay, I win!
In that case, why isn't the reason, "I'm sorry, the developers don't like one big powerful civ"? We have to have game balance.
Because that would break your immersion.
Sid Meier said no.
Yeah.
that's why. Because Sid said so.
Veto. Yeah.
Call in today.
In North America, the number is 301-637-7659. That's 301-637-POLY. In Europe, 44-121-288-7659. That's 44-121-288-POLY.
You can Skype us at The Polycast or email us at polycast@apolton.net.
For more information on Polycast, our sibling show Modcast, or about Polycast in general,
log on to the series' official website at polycast.apolton.net.
Someone's got to sing the intro to Forum Talk.
Just because this is a new year doesn't mean the no singing rule has been suspended.
So far, the only segment to have its own little ditty.
Are you kidding me? There's also the Senate.
That's kind of suck.
I don't think that actually ever made it to air.
Thank you for listening to the 60th episode of Polycast, an official podcast of Polton Civilization site. My name is Imran Siddiqui, and I will be saying bye to you with a few of my friends. At least I call them friends right now. Dan Q.
We're back.
Tim.
I'm out of here.
Makalua.
Okay, thanks, bye.
That's what she said. And Cardamandula.
Snap.
Bye, you guys. See ya.
Now that you've been on Polycast, is your Civ 4 life really complete?
Yes.
Is there something in the far background?
I've been chatting away with my mic on mute. And we've been having this great conversation. I've been really funny. It's been witty. It's been...
Ooh, there's a segue. Speaking of opinions dropping, Apolton's forums have been upgraded.
But there are some games. I mean, you can quite easily... Did I really say that? Can we cut that out of the...
It's kind of blasphemous.
Whoa.
But
Maki, do you ever just feel like really depressed inside when the guys go off like that?
Yes. And sometimes I have no hope for the other half of our species.
What, you mean non-Civ players?
No.
You know, growing unhappiness, losing production, and then I take the last step of going into the last sip.
That sounded very Porky Pig. Manta freedom.
That's all, folks.
It reminds me of a blooper from actually the first season when Mackie was trying to pronounce philosophical.
Oh, God.
I remember that one.
Even I remember that.
Mercantilism is pointless because I typically go banking economics. Yeah, in the later game, I'm flipping between free religion and
pacifism.
Thank you.
Pacifism. Pacifism.
He's got my philosophical problem.
Okay.
Cool. Thanks, guys.
Nah.
Bye.
Bye.
See ya.
Oh, how do I hang up?
Ha 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 ha!
She's so used to getting hung up on. She's like, what's this red button for?
Yeah, Dan, we need to put that in the episode somewhere.
I was about to say, that's instant blooper material.
Blooper reel.
Oh, mate, that's cool.
Record date, January 10th, 2009. SoundClips copyright Civilization IV, The Warlords, and the Beyond the Sword expansion packs. Copyright 2009, Poulton Civilization site at apoulton.net.